This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge.
The mini-sode.
Mini-sode 14,
oh,
if
shit.
You will, some may say.
Some may say.
And this week, we watched the documentary Tales of the Grim Sleeper.
Yes. It was released in 2014.
Yes.
And it is on Hulu if you would like to watch it.
Yes. And apparently you can also, if you have a subscription, stream it on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
So, you know, you have multiple ways to watch it.
And I was going to say the director was a guy named Nick Broomfield.
Yes. And I looked it up and like everything he does is documentaries apparently.
Okay.
So he loves himself a documentary, and it was also nominated for 6 awards.
Oh, wow.
And it won one of those awards. And also, for those of you who don't know, we already covered this case on episode 13, way back at the beginning. And so now we are taking a look at a documentary that explores that same topic of the Grim Sleeper, a.k.a. Lonnie David Franklin Jr., who has a long-ass name.
Yeah. And I thought that, like, since we had already covered it,
yeah,
it would be cool to, you know, A, learn more. Like, I'm excited for when we watch the Aaron Hernandez one.
Right.
Since we've covered him before.
Yeah.
But, like, learning from different perspectives and this and that, because it is a documentary and not a movie.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of wish we would have watched it
beforehand. Me too. Yeah, we should have definitely. I always think that. I'm like, I need to watch more things before we do an episode because I read a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of stuff that you can't find online, but you can find in a documentary.
Yeah.
But what did you rate it?
It's. I feel like it's so hard to rate a documentary.
It really is, yeah.
But I'm going to go with an 8.
Okay.
Because I liked the way it was set up and the way it kind of brought you through. Mm-hmm. Because it started with, like, he interviewed his friends and, like, his friends were all like, oh, he didn't do it. And then by the end, everyone was like, oh, he definitely did
it. Yeah. And they were like, how can we help you solve this?
Yeah. And so it was, like, a cohesive timeline and, like, he tried to do everything that he could. He put himself in harm's way.
Right.
And, like, I don't know. So I thought as a documentary, like, the director did all the stops appropriate.
Yeah, for sure.
What did you think?
I was thinking the same thing. I was kind of stuck between, like, a 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was kind of bored.
Yes.
Throughout it. But I was also, like, watching it at work when I was already bored at work because there wasn't a lot for me to do. So I don't know if that lent to it being, like, boring in my mind or what. Like, I just have a bad attention span. So I'm going to give it, like, an 8 because I know my attention span is that of a gnat rather than, like, a normal person. So,
and it, I mean, it was a little boring and, like, it definitely helped to know the case previously.
Yeah, you definitely needed to know, like, at least a little bit of the case. Because here is the riveting description of this. I wrote it down. I took it directly from the description of the movie, like, on the poster.
Uh-huh.
Filmmaker Nick Broomfield investigates the case of the Grim Sleeper, a serial killer terrorizing South Central Los Angeles for 25 years.
So, like,
so there's not a lot.
So, I mean, I guess for people that didn't listen to the episode, just a little recap on who the Grim Sleeper was. He was a man from L.A. and he killed prostitutes and drug dealers. He was black. The majority of the people that he killed was black, if not all of them.
I think all of his victims mm-hmm. were, yes.
And he supposedly took a 14-year break in between, starting in the 80s and then taking a break and killing again in the early 2000s.
Right. Yeah. And it's a super interesting case because as you'll, and I really liked this about the movie, or documentary rather, is it basically wasn't solved because it was black women who were being murdered and who also did sex work.
Yes.
So therefore, their lives literally didn't matter to the police. Like, at one point, you'll see it in the documentary, but one of the women working for the Black Coalition fighting back serial murders,
mm-hmm.
They, like, had 11 women already dead and were like, it's not a serial murder.
Yeah. They're like, all just sex workers.
And, like, it's really tough to watch because of that reason, I would mm-hmm. say, but it's because it's an uncomfortable topic that more people should probably talk about regardless.
And there was there was one thing just adding to that.
Yeah.
It was towards the end, but they referring to them like the cops not fucking caring.
Right.
They classified these killers as NHI, which stands for no humans involved.
Yeah, we talked about that in our case.
Yeah, and yeah. It's like to describe murders of sex workers and drug addicts, and it's like they're a human though.
Yeah, that's still a literal human being. You don't get to just say no yeah. humans involved. Yeah, it's very, very upsetting,
it
basically.
Is.
I would just like to tell you my first note that I think gives this that real edge of a 7 to an 8.
Okay.
And that would be the narrator's voice.
Oh my God, yes.
As soon as he started talking, I was like, this is great. I love this. He has like a weird, it's not like a weird accent. He has like an accent and then his voice is weird.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like his voice was just really interesting, but it was also soothing at the same time.
Really?
And I was like, this voice was everything to me.
I found it kind of annoying.
You did?
Yeah. I was, my note is literally the narrator's voice is like a lot.
I said the narrator's voice was everything. So, you know.
My first note was in the beginning, they show the Grim Sleeper's house.
Right.
And I wrote, using Google Views is a really interesting choice.
Yeah, I did think that was an interesting choice as well. But I liked later when they kept using Google Maps to notate his house and then where in relation to his house
yeah.
the murders occurred, because I thought that was super interesting. And they didn't look like they were that far away,
mm-mm.
like on the map, but it's LA. So like it was probably still 30 fucking minutes to get
yeah.
over there or something.
Get around the fucking corner.
Yeah. But I, like Sarah said earlier at the beginning, because this took probably years to film this
oh,
documentary.
Yeah, I think so.
And at the beginning, the neighborhood, like the people in his neighborhood and stuff, are so unhappy that he's there filming that they're literally like screaming at him while he's talking to other people on the street, like from their houses. Like, I don't remember. Oh, I did write it down.
I was going to say, I wrote it down if you didn't.
I didn't write it down.
So they called him a peckerwood.
Yes, they kept calling him a peckerwood.
Which is because the guy is white and he's from England. And they said that, like, he's a part of the peckerwood. And I guess that is, like, not necessarily, like, a part of the Ku Klux Klan, but,
mm-hmm.
like, some sort of very racist group.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I literally was looking at you and had a thought in my head, and I lost it.
Of
so
course.
It doesn't matter. And his friends, I did think at the beginning they made a valid point. Something about this, I'm going to go off on a tangent here really quick away from that thought. But something about this documentary is that a lot of the people who they interview are either addicted to crack or
mm-hmm.
were addicted to crack.
Yes.
So a lot of their speaking is like very fast and sometimes it's hard to understand and stuff like that. So just as a general thing, but because at the beginning when they were talking to the friends,
mm-hmm.
they kind of weren't making a lot of sense to some of the degrees, But one thing they did say was that when they arrested him, the next day it was announced in the papers, like, the Grim Sleeper has been caught, and it still wasn't, like, allegedly.
Yeah.
And I did understand their point there that, like, even though they had that DNA and everything, they immediately labeled him, like, the Grim Sleeper, like, we got this monster off the streets, blah, 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 blah. And, like, to have that come out of nowhere when this person has been your friend for all these years would probably be very, like, disarming and stuff.
Yeah.
So I liked that little interaction at the beginning.
They also, like, because he had, like, three friends that they talked to throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
And they started by saying, like, oh, no, we didn't think he did it and right. stuff like that. And they said that if, like, a bad house would come into the neighborhood, like a crack house or a gang house,
yeah,
that Lonnie would, like, shut it down and that the neighborhood was very close-knit.
Yeah.
And so they were, like, saying all these nice things. And I also had a little fun fact.
Okay.
That came from the documentary. Mm-hmm. But most people flying to LA, LAX,
yeah,
will fly over Lonnie's house.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. That is a fun fact. Yeah, I thought it was funny when they were saying that too, because in my head I was like, yeah, because he had the only bad house. Like, he wanted to have the only bad house on the block.
And he would, like, shut down crack houses, but he, like, would give out crack.
Yeah, and they talk about that a little bit in it, where he was like, he hated crack and he hated drinking, but he would lure these women to his house with crack.
Mm-hmm.
So, which I thought was kind of interesting, because, like, all of his friends knew that he hated crack. And then the sex worker that they went around for most of the documentary with, I believe her name was Pam, she was, like, getting them with all of these other sex workers, and, like, they had no idea that he hated crack, it seemed.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting.
Because they were like, yeah, we would just, like, he'd give it to us and we'd smoke it. And
yeah,
whatever.
Like, that's how we went and hung out and stuff. So it was really interesting.
But also, Pam was, I loved Pam.
Pam
she was
great. She was a lot, but, like, in the best way.
Yeah. And
she was really cool.
I think she said she was 4 years sober, and I was like, good for you, Pam.
Yeah, and she... I have written down a couple of things that Pam said that I was like, you're
go
my fucking hero. But this is later, and she is going around just asking random sex workers on the street, did you know Lonnie David Franklin Jr.?
Yeah.
And this one girl is walking around with no pants or underwear on.
Yeah.
And Pam says, she's out here asshole naked. And I was like, Pam, what the fuck does that mean? And then I think that it might be a cultural thing, because later Richard, who is one of the friends, I'm pretty sure,
yes,
he also said it. Where is it? I literally wrote it down because it made me laugh so hard. I didn't write down who it was, but basically one other person said the term asshole naked. And I was like, is that just how you describe someone being naked, or do you have to see their asshole? I don't understand.
And I loved when they passed the woman wearing no anything.
Yeah.
She was Donald Duck in it.
She was Donald Duck in it real hard.
Or
Winnie
the
Pooh.
She literally was like, guys, did you see that? She's not wearing no draws.
Yeah.
And then she goes, back up in the car, let's look.
It was really funny. I loved Pam. She was great.
Something that I had about the actual documentary.
Oh, yeah.
When they were interviewing the sex workers, they did such a bad job of blurring their faces. Because, like, they just blurred their eyes and nose.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, if you're in that neighborhood or from that area, you can clearly tell who these people are.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
No. It's like,
and
you need,
like,
to blur their whole face.
They did the same thing when they blurred the Grim Sleeper's wife's pictures. They literally just blurred her eyes, like, not even her nose. And I was like, bruh.
And,
like,
then they drive past her and you can see her. Like,
yeah. That was a weird choice. You're not wrong. One thing I really, really did like about this documentary, though, was the fact that they interviewed people who were actually affected by the crime, yes, other than just the family. Mm-hmm. Like, they interviewed the neighbors, and they interviewed even the victim's parents, and they also talked to Margaret, I think her last name's Prescott, who, she was the one who was from the Black Coalition fighting back serial murders. Very long title, but...
But great work.
Great work. And, like, they interviewed her and her struggle because she was trying to get more information on this case. And I knew that there was a statistic like this somewhere, so I looked it up. And just as an oh no fact, because we haven't had an oh no fact in a while, is that Black women are more likely to be murdered 3 times more than any other race of woman.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's kind of like why that coalition was brought up, and the fact that there are so many of these women getting murdered and no one was giving a fuck about it. So yeah. I thought it was really cool that they interviewed everyone on the spectrum, because like in Abducted in Plain Sight, they only interviewed the family.
Mm-hmm. And like they said that they tried to reach out to the mayor and the cops and the deputies and whatever, and like all of them denied being interviewed. And like the documentary even showed the email saying, hey, we're not gonna do this, like, covering all their bases, basically. Yeah,
which is very cool. I like that they actually showed that, because mm-hmm. that's the kind of stuff I'm always like, well, why didn't you have this or that? And to actually see it was pretty nice.
Yeah. I had one that talked about when he got arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it basically, all of his neighbors and stuff didn't know why until like next day, and they literally thought it was for stealing cars like, for a while, because I guess he didn't steal the cars, he dealt with stolen cars, one of his friends quoted,
which was very funny. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like everyone thought that was what it was for, and they were like, why are they shutting down a whole fucking street
for just like stealing cars? And that's what you thought.
They also said that his son knew how to drive at 9 years old, and I was like, that's too early.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But if he was dealing in stolen cars his whole life, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Something that I thought was, like, good is that they talked about his 14-year hiatus, mm-hmm. and that it's probably very likely that he wasn't on like a straight up hiatus that whole time. But I did appreciate that they presented that as information that wasn't fact.
Mm-hmm.
They like, because I feel like some documentaries kind of do that, and where they're like, he had a 14-year hiatus, but was it really a hiatus? And then like list all these facts to make you think it wasn't, type of thing.
Yeah.
They just like brought up that fact and were like, but we're kind of unsure. So that's the end of that, you know? Like,
because, I mean, he had to have, I mean, we know he was still seeing sex workers and taking these weird pictures he would take and whatever. We just don't know if there's any victims tied to him with his DNA.
Right, exactly. One thing that I thought was crazy, just for any job,
mm-hmm.
was when Pam was out with the guys driving around, and she said that there was a woman that they talked to who's been doing sex work for 40 years.
Yes.
I'm like, I don't want to do any job for 40 years like that.
And she still did look pretty
good.
She
did look damn good. I was like, dang, that's impressive. But also kind of like, how young were you when you started sex work, also was my initial thought too, and it made me kind of sad. But good work ethic. I could never work at a job for 40 years.
There was also a scene where it starts off with a woman just sitting, and just, she smoked the biggest crack pipe I had ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just showed her like walking around as she's like coughing from smoking
on crack. A corner. Yeah. That's the thing is, that's literally what going to LA is like. Like, if you don't go to just the main part of it.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, LA is so cool. And I'm like, LA is a sad and dark fucking place, mm-hmm. man. Like, but
did say another oh no fact right after that.
Yeah.
And it was in the 80s, crack dealers employed more people in South Central LA than AT&T, IBM, and Xerox combined. And yeah. Those were the three like biggest employers. Companies,
yeah. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I thought was super cool that Pam did, because she was kind of like the star of this documentary.
Yeah.
Was this happens a lot closer to the end, but she was able to identify like at least six women mm-hmm. from the photos that Lonnie had taken to confirm that they were alive,
yeah.
which was super cool. But the first one she found was actually his son, Chris's girlfriend, the girl with like the blue eyeshadow.
Yeah.
Interviewing her was super fucking cool.
Yeah, definitely.
She seemed like she dated the son for a while.
Mm-hmm. And like she's one of the only people who were allowed in his house.
Yeah, and she got to see like a lot of the stuff inside of his house. And like everyone who talked about Lonnie, they were like, there was stuff that was weird, but like I just never thought he was murdering people.
Exactly. They just thought he was kind of kinky or like sexually had not normal likes.
Yeah, he was just a pervert, as that girl said. I couldn't get her name. I meant to go back and get it and I forgot to. But I thought the most perfect moment to me that encapsulated LA was that scene of the woman hitting the crack pipe on a like busy ass street.
Mm-hmm.
But also when they're talking to that guy and then a bunch of fucking gunshots start going off.
Yes.
Yeah. That was a really scary scene. And the director was just like, keep it cool, guys. We don't need to run away yet. And I was like, sir, you need to run away the most.
Yeah. Like the friend that they brought with them was like, we need to go. And he's like, why don't we just stay here for this kid? Like for a minute, because I thought the kid was just going to go see what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think it was Richard that was with them.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard was like, no, he's literally running away. You need to leave.
Yeah.
Because there was like 10 or 12 gunshots.
Yeah. And immediate sirens went off too.
Yeah, that was nuts.
But I just thought that was like a really perfect encapsulation of LA that they were able to include.
Also, I wrote down a quote that I loved from Pam.
Yeah.
While they were driving around. And she said that she doesn't like to deal with, like, pimps and stuff. And she said, it's wrong for a man to be out here selling these women's pussies when he ain't selling his dick.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Pam was my favorite because she was so crass. Mm-hmm. But, like, you weren't mad at her when she was crass.
She was my favorite.
And yeah. She would, like, drive up to these sex workers and be like, hey, you out here hoeing? And I was like, Pam, get some fucking chill.
But then she was like also really nice, where she would be like, after talking to them for a second, she'd be like,
yeah,
how old are you? And they'd be like 19 or 20, and she'd go, okay, you be safe now.
Yeah, like, she was just like really, really sweet. But she was just so funny because she was so crass. Mm-hmm. And like she was a ham, and I loved her. She was great. Watch the Pam not be her name. And we're just calling her Pam.
I fucking hope it's her name.
I'm fairly certain it is. The one part of this documentary that freaked me out was the guy that they met that used to share photos of women that he fucked with Lonnie. And I was like, okay, I get it. Like, you didn't have internet porn.
Yeah.
At the beginning of this. And that's probably why you exchanged photos. But also, if Lonnie always had so many more photos than you, but also had a wife, like, it just felt super weird. And even he was like, it's kind of weird that he, like, has a wife and he's out here with all these hoes. And, like, everyone knew that he was out here with hoes. And it was just a very interesting thing.
I think his name was Gary.
Okay.
But another thing that I noticed is in the beginning, the three like main men that were his friends that they talked to all like stood up for him. And then they all three of them called the guy and asked to speak with him separately and be like, oh, like, we love Lonnie and yeah. he definitely didn't do it. But there was this one time and everyone had a story yeah. about, like, he, you know, pulled this sex worker's hair, like, really
yeah,
hard.
Yeah, really or, violently in front of them.
Yeah, or, I cleaned the carpet in his mobile home and it was definitely covered in blood.
Yeah.
And, like, just, like, everyone had, like, one story, and when you put them all together, it's yeah. like, oh, yeah.
This definitely adds up. yeah. And that guy who was, like, talking about the pictures, he was like, yeah, he had, like, a van with a mattress in the back that he also had a camera pointed at that you yeah. couldn't see his face if it was ever pointed, but you could see the woman. And I was like, dude, do you hear what you're saying right now? Like, that guy kills people in his free time.
And there was, like, one picture, and it's like, yeah, you can see Lonnie's fingers in her vagina, but yeah. you can't see his face. And it's like, that's too much.
It was a lot. It was too much. But he was so proud of his photos when he was showing them off to the guy. Himself. He was like, look at this girl. She loved when I take photos of her. And I was like, God damn it. But yeah, like, the one friend said that he detailed his car, mm-hmm. and on more than one occasion, there was, like, a weird substance that he wasn't sure what it was, but just cleaned it up, no questions asked.
Yeah, he was like, it was dark like oil, but it wasn't oil.
Yeah, I was like, bro.
The fuck?
God damn it.
Something that... I remember is that Lonnie was arrested with Richard before, and like they yeah. didn't do fingerprints or DNA, and like he'd been arrested, I think it said he had 15 felonies prior to this
and never gave his DNA.
Yeah, they never asked for his fucking DNA.
Yeah, I think that's actually like a newer law that and it's still not available in all states, is like every time if any felony you get, no matter what the charge, you have to put your DNA in the database.
I think that's a smart thing.
Yeah, it's a really smart thing, but I'm pretty sure like it's not required in every state. Yeah. I'll definitely need to fact check that because yeah. that's probably complete bullshit, but I'm pretty sure that is true. One thing I also did really like about this movie, because we've kind of talked about it off and on, is... like how well the movie showed like the disproportionate amount of wealth that is happening in that area, and that like they were talking about how none of these people can get jobs, mm-hmm. and so they just wander around all day, and that's how they get in trouble because they have nothing to do.
Yeah,
so they're just walking on the streets getting into trouble, like stirring the pot, you know. And I thought that was interesting, and I feel like it's important because I feel like there's someone out there who is like the police in that mm-hmm. situation and are like, well, they're like fucking crackheads, so do they even deserve to live? And it's like, well, yes,
yeah,
they do actually. So I liked that aspect of the movie.
Yeah, and like they're part of that when they started the investigation in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, no one. Sorry, I'm trying to figure out how to say it.
Yeah.
They knew that there was a serial killer because they were able to link the bullets from all the gunshots
yeah.
to one gun, but they didn't tell anyone
yeah.
that there was a serial killer. And, like, the woman from the Black Coalition said, like, that when she tried to get information, that they said, oh, well, he's only killing hookers, so...
Yeah.
Like...
Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. Yeah, when... That's the quote I was thinking about, like, much earlier was mm-hmm. that quote. And I was like, the audacity of this motherfucker to, like, say that.
These people have kids and, yeah. you know, lives of their own.
Because they aren't doing the same thing that you're doing with your life doesn't make them less of a human than you. Which is unfortunate that you have to even tell somebody that, but whatever. A moment that I was like really not expecting was when one of the friends, Richard, like got the shit kicked out of him for talking about the case.
Yeah, to these guys, like that That was really sad. And I'm really surprised that he called them again to, like, keep talking to them.
I think he kind of wanted to, like, show, like, this is what happens when you investigate this case. Because he even said something like that. Mm-hmm. He was like, this was his son, Chris. And I feel like we should also talk about the son, Chris.
Yeah, because then they go ahead and interview him later.
Which is really cool that Pam was able to also fucking get him.
Yeah.
Like, if they hadn't met Pam, I feel like this documentary wouldn't have been able to go forward.
No, it would just be them videotaping sex workers on the street.
Yeah, like just driving past, and the sex worker would probably be like, man, what the fuck, and flip them off because they're just staring at them. But yeah, when they interviewed, that happens later when they interview the son. What I thought was really interesting was that the son felt like he was a snitch because his DNA was what was used to find his father.
Mm-hmm.
And like some of his family members even believe so strongly in him being a snitch for that they like stopped talking to him.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But I, again, think that's like something cultural. But I just thought it was cool to see that in action.
Yeah. Also, they talked about his wife.
Yeah.
And like, so they were the wealthiest family on the street, and his wife worked for the superintendent office for schools.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I don't know why, but I felt that that was so weird that, like, she had such this, like, this high power job.
Yeah.
And, like, he's stealing cars and doing all this stuff in order to make money. And it's just, like, the dynamic is so different.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And I think we talked about it like a little bit in our episode, but I don't think we talked about it a lot, maybe if at all. But the thing about like him and his wife, a lot of people were speculating if they were actually even together.
Yeah.
Because like she rarely slept in the house according to the neighbors. And like, I think it was Richard, because Richard was definitely the most active friend out of those three men. But I think Richard said in like, in the 20 years I've known him, I've never seen him in the car with his wife.
Yeah.
Which is super fucking weird if you think about it. Like, it to is. Never be seen with your significant other is really weird. And you guys aren't probably... Like, I wonder if they were just separated.
Yeah.
You know, but we're still legally married type thing. I don't know. I have a lot more notes, but I don't super care about them. But the one thing I also thought was really cool was them interviewing like the known lone survivor of his crimes, like who was actually attacked. And in the documentary, she says that she was in the car with him and she remembers him saying, "Bitch, I'll shoot you again." And she realized that she had passed out and that she had been shot and woke up to like him on her chest or something like that. And I thought it was really cool because she like looked directly at the camera and was like, they think all black women are sex workers, but I'm not even a sex worker.
Yeah.
Like she was just asking for a ride to a party and Lonnie offered it. She didn't even ask for it.
Yeah. Like she was just looking at his car.
Yeah. And she was like, oh, it's a Pinto. That's cool. I haven't seen one. And he offered her a ride and tried to attack her. But I thought that was really cool to get her in there and get her interviewed as well.
And so they started talking about his survivors.
Yeah.
And there was one named Beamer, which we didn't see. But like, Lonnie raped and cut her throat.
Yeah.
And she fucking survived. And she was too scared to, like, come forward and talk on the documentary.
Which is understandable.
Mm-hmm. And then they also spent all this time looking for this woman named Lily or Lele.
I thought her name was Lily.
I think it was Lele.
It might have been.
Who was Lonnie's son Chris's nanny growing up.
Yeah.
And, like, he also raped her.
Yeah.
And she was an addict and was too afraid to report him because
she was an addict.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really interesting. I like that they ended it with all of those women who were affected by his crimes. Mm-hmm. Like, they And then they showed the pictures of all of the other women who are still unidentified. And yes. I thought that was like a really powerful way to end the documentary.
It definitely was.
This is completely unrelated to that very nice ending. But they do show like very few, but they show a couple of scenes from Lonnie's court case.
Mm-hmm.
And his lawyer is such a dick.
Yeah.
Like, when the other one was like, when are you getting this DNA tested? It's been a year. And he was like, well, if you don't want me on, then I'm good.
Yeah. If you think you'll find someone who will do it better than me, then yeah, do that. Yeah,
like, he just went full baby mode. And I was like, dude, this is not a good look. But I just thought that was funny because yeah. he was just such a dick.
They, besides the people that we talked about, like his three main friends, they interviewed a bunch of other people
yeah.
that worked with him. And there was these two men that they interviewed outside of the car. And they were like making jokes about him killing the sex workers.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate scene.
Yeah, and like it kind of surprised me that they kept it in the documentary.
Yeah.
But they were saying that like the sex workers don't know who they were messing with when they got in his car.
Yeah.
And the only way they're going to get out of Lonnie's car is if they were dead. And it's like, why not report people? I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And it's almost like, was that their defense mechanism? Like how we make jokes when we start reading about mm-hmm. horrible murders or yeah. what? But it was still like, yikes, that was an awkward sentence you just uttered, my friend.
Yeah.
Because he said it in like a joking manner, too. Like,
they were laughing at it.
Yeah, they were just like, oh, you know, if you get in his car, you're not getting out again. And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, wow, that's so fun.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I have to say about it.
I have a couple.
You go, then. Okay. I skipped over like half of my notes because I'm like, I don't even know what I was talking about.
Yeah, I skipped over a few things, but there are some, I feel like, important things.
Yeah.
That his... The one friend, Gary, that would take pictures with him
right.
was literally, and to the day that the documentary came out, was never interviewed by the police.
Yeah.
And he said that he was present when over half of the women were there. I also wrote about the fact that...
And wasn't he also the friend who was on the bike in front of his house in that Google photo, or was that a different friend?
That was a different guy.
Okay.
They also had a sketch of him in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
That they didn't release until 2009.
They had a lot of stuff they didn't mm-hmm. release until 2000s.
I thought it was funny that the way that they got his DNA
yes.
towards the end was because it would be on women's breasts because he liked women's breasts.
Yeah.
And his friend Gary was like, he was a titty sucking man. And I thought
Gary has
funny.
Zero chill, and I love him.
Yes.
Except he still kind of creeps me out because he has all those photos.
The last thing I think I'm going to say
yeah.
is the woman from the coalition.
Yeah, Margaret.
Yes. So I loved the fact that when they were doing the press conference.
I did skip over that note when I should have talked about it, yeah.
So they were doing the press conference when they announced that they arrested him, and it was the mayor and, like, the deputy or the sergeant. And they're, like, talking about their accomplishments and their achievements and
yeah.
20 years worth of hard work. And she comes up and grabs the microphone and is like, we've been doing all the work for you.
Yeah.
And, like, she just shit on him and it was great.
She's like, I have files dating back to 84 that you've never looked at. Mm-hmm. And like, we could have told you it was a serial killer a long time ago. She was just going off and it was fantastic.
It really was.
And like honestly, it was kind of like one of those things that you watch and you're awkward because like you can picture how you would feel if you were there.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really cool that they showed it and that she even fucking did it because that's impressive. I would never have the balls, I don't think.
Right. And it's like all of these citizen detectives are yeah. doing so much work.
They're doing it. They out here doing it, TM. I'm sorry. I'm just talking like an internet person now. But yeah, overall, I think it was a really good and effective documentary, if kind of boring at some points.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it was kind of boring because of the narrator's voice, because it was so monotonous.
One thing that I did notice is that they had some sound issues where, like, it would be really loud, and then the next person being interviewed would be really quiet and then really loud, and, like,
yeah, it was definitely interesting. It was, I think it's because that guy who's walking around with the mic and stuff is Nick Broomfield, the documentary person, and maybe he just, like us, just couldn't figure out his mics.
You're not wrong.
But yeah, we hope that you guys will watch that. It's on Hulu or Amazon, so, like, it's easy to find because it was actually really interesting.
Yeah, and if you haven't yet, listen to our episode on him, which you said was episode 13.
Episode 13.
Yeah, and then let us know what you think, if you have any opinions on it.
Yeah, because it's a really interesting case, and I think it's one that isn't talked about all that often, and he had probably a lot of victims, like at least 100, most likely. Yeah. So that's pretty freaking important, I would say.
Honestly.
Make sure that you go and check out our social media stuff.
Because we post things and, we do. Do that.
We are doing that, TM. I'm sorry.
You can also email us at crimebinge@gmail.com. Let us know what you want us to talk about and watch next.
Yes.
If you want us to do the Aaron Hernandez series, because I think... I know I want to do it.
Yeah, I do want to do it, but I'm like, we just covered Aaron Hernandez, but we didn't really just cover Aaron Hernandez.
I know,
so.
It feels like it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, but we hope to see, I don't know what I'm saying. We'll
see you on Friday.
We'll see you on Friday is what I'm trying to say. I'm like instantly distracted because I closed my computer. And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.